Hey everyone, I'm Francesco Akira, the Nova Fireball, the new member of the United Empire. And please enjoy listening Wrestle In.
Hello everyone and welcome to the January episode of Wrestling's Purovision podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Johnson, and joining me this month, as always, my wonderful co-host Kay. How are you?
Thank you. I'm extremely busy as always because for some reason I decided that I had to write a gigantic Dragon Gate article like right in the last bit of this month.
Always busy. And as well, obviously, we talked about last month. It was Ben's last episode with us, unfortunately. But fortunately, we have a very worthy replacement. Someone who likes All Japan just as much. Someone who likes beefy wrestling just as much. Someone who likes Jake Lindman. Maybe not that part. Fuser, how are you?
I'm back, baby. I'm doing pretty good. Ben has gone off to the retirement home with El Generico. But I'm here to replace him, and hopefully I can live up to the standard of his All Japan loving and his big meat men slapping meat.
I'm sorry, it was an orphanage. Please do not slander the name of El Generico.
I thought it was a children's orphanage.
Yeah, you said retirement home. He's taking care of children.
Oh, my bad. My fault.
It's a lofty, lofty bar to clear, but we'll see how we get on. We have no Jake Lee to talk about this month, so we'll fly through in flying colours, really. So, yeah, as I say, no Jake Lee, but lots and lots and lots to talk about. And we all know where we've got to start, don't we? Okada, Kazuchika Okada, leaving New Japan Pro Wrestling. Perhaps the news that we never thought was going to happen or wished never was going to happen, but it has happened, and Okada is leaving New Japan.
It's wild. Like there were rumors of this, right? Like a while back, and I was like, nah, that's preposterous. because it is kind of like we joked about this previously in the podcast as well, right? Like New Japan's plan was always sort of like, if in doubt, press Okada.
Yeah.
Push Okada, that's a funnier joke. But alas, I did not make that one. no, I think like it's really strange because he feels in so many ways like a wrestler was synonymous with that promotion. So like seeing him out of it is in itself going to be extremely weird. Seeing New Japan without him is going to be weird. It's kind of wild. And obviously, like, we don't know where he's going yet. So, like, that's going to be interesting in and of itself. Like, if he's going to AEW, possibly, like, he might have, like, crossover matches with New Japan again, but it's still going to be very, very different without him, like, as a roster member.
Yeah, the reporting doesn't seem to have sort of like, no one really knows. I know the sort of feelings going around that it maybe it's WWE. I think it's Monthly Puresu who reported that most recently, that they have a source close to Okada who said he's likely going to WWE, but it's all likely and unlikely that no one really knows 100%, do they, Fuser?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's funny about that MP report is that Sean Rossap like debunked it about an hour later, saying that there was no the talks were premature between Okada and WWE NXT, and that was understood by WWE, AEW, and New Japan. So you know, grain of salt for any articles you read about the Okada situation. But yeah, no, this is like huge. I like when there's first the rumors that he was leaving. We're not leaving, that his contract was running out. I read it and was like, oh, okay, so he's just going to sign a new contract. And then it's just like New Japan's statement saying like, yeah, Okada's leaving and we got to like change up some card stuff. And it's like, oh, okay, this is real now. this is no longer just a little speculation and people shrugging it off and saying that he's going to sign for another 5 years and be champion, world champion again. This is like a real thing happening, that Okada's leaving the company. I don't know where it's going to go. I do hope AEW, because like Kay said, if he goes to AEW, He can still do like matches with with New Japan, so that kind of still like it's a thing of like, yeah, I've left, but like I'm still here, kind of. Hi, I'm sure I'm back for Wrestle Kingdom again.
Yeah, that seems sort of the more desirable scenario from a New Japan fan perspective. I mean, it's an interesting one that I've had it before with people like AJ Styles or Shinsuke Nakamura. If they go to WWE, I'm just not going to see them wrestle. And it's like Gunther or Walter is the sort of the most recent one. Is like he's gone to WWE and I've not seen him wrestle for about 2 years. And it's really sort of sad in a way that you sort of follow someone's career or years of their career, and then they go to a promotion you don't watch, and then you just, that's it, then you just stop watching them. And I guess if he goes to AEW, then there's still that sort of connection, and you'll still see him in a way. But WWE seems maybe that is where he's going to go, somewhere totally different, it seems to be, maybe the direction. Because if he's going to stick around and wrestle New Japan anyway with AEW, why would he not just sign a new contract? Because it seems if he's going to stay doing New Japan matches, then there's no real incentive to not sign a new contract for me anyway. That's sort of my view on it. It's a weird situation, isn't it?
Yeah, for me, it's like, I mean, he did mention like that he'd wrestle in New Japan again, like after leaving. So like in that sense, I don't think that's unlikely. I think the main thing is, right, like, obviously, like, I don't know about that in depth because the Japanese industry is a lot more secretive about that. But, like, from what I understand, New Japan pays a lot worse than AEW would. Mm. And obviously, like, there's certain, you know, sort of issues with how workers are treated. Obviously, like, most of those are for the people who haven't come up through their dojo. Like, that's probably not the case for Okada, but still, like, that stuff like that could be a problem. And then obviously they have like a very like their style is like very like rough on the body. Like, if he were to sign even with AEW, obviously, like, then he could have like work a much, you know, lighter schedule, like only occasionally do a match and still, you know, be paid a lot of money for it. Like, I think some people like have guessed in a sense that like whichever promotion he goes through, he goes to, like, he's gonna, you know, he seeks to sort of maybe reduce his schedule a little bit. I don't know, maybe spend some more time with his kid and, you know, earn still probably earn the same amount of money given the, you know, the pay difference. So I think like in that sense, it could really be anything. Like, I do not have any specific expectations at this point because like I genuinely don't know.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's so open. We don't really know what's going on at this stage. I'm sure by February's episode, we'll know exactly where Okada has gone. But the thing we do know for definite is that his last Cracker and Hall match has passed. At time of recording, it was today, and it was a trios tag team match for the titles with Okada teaming with Ishii and Tanahashi, and they defeated the TMDK team of Hayes, Nichols, and Fujita. And it was an interesting one. Okada, towards the end, he was playing the greatest hits, wasn't he? Hitting all the signature moves, and he looked quite emotional, actually, I thought, towards the end, and he was really sort of soaking up the moment. And it was a good match, quite a fun match, but in the end they kept the titles, the Okada trio, and they're vacating the belts rather than handing them off to someone else on the way out. So it was a bittersweet moment, maybe.
I have thoughts about this, and they're not gonna be positive. Like, what, 10 minutes into the first episode and I'm already going to bitch and complain? Right on. So
that's usually my job, you say, so.
Yeah. I'm very, 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 very against Okada going over in this match and then just vacating the titles. It's very much a bullshit thing. It feels very backstage politics. Like, I'm not going to put over a young guy in or on my way out, brother kind of thing. I don't know. I don't like it. I like, especially with something like the trios titles where it's like three people on the titles, you're also, by doing this, you're not just screwing over TMDK, who were the challengers, and not letting them win the titles, but you're also screwing over your own teammates because now they need to go find a new partner because you vacate a third of the championships. It's just, I don't know, it just doesn't feel right. It feels icky. I appreciate Okada, but like, this wasn't the way to go. And also, it kind of makes me a bit more annoyed about Okada versus Ospreay from Battle in the Valley, because like, there was a whole argument with Ospreay losing to Okada there, that it was like, well, Ospreay's on his way out of the company, so it makes sense that he will like do a bunch of jobs on the way out. Okay, so where's the same energy for Okada then? Especially since Okada was a champ, or is a champion, and he didn't drop the titles on his way out. That's like a really big hidden, like, unwritten rule of wrestling, that you put people over on the way out, and especially if you have a championship, and that's this unwritten rule being broken.
I guess to play devil's advocate, he's Okada. I mean, he's like, I guess that's the devil advocate side of it.
Yes, sure. He's Okada. But like, at the same time though, he's also a champion, and you just, I don't know, even just because of namesake, if you're leaving a company and you have a championship, you do the job, you give up the title instead of being like, nah, I'm not going to lose and I'm just going to vacate instead. He can go beat Tanahashi in his last match here. I don't care about that. That's one thing. But this is a championship we're talking about. That's just super egotistical of Okada to just go, nah, fuck these kids, I'm going to just be champion and then just vacate the title when I'm done.
Yeah, I guess at the end of the day, like, I don't know where the booking decision came from. Yeah, like, it could also be that the bookers are like, haha, if we're gonna let him win here, maybe he's gonna come back and have another match, you know, if we butt him up a little bit. Like, that could also be the situation. Like, it is, like, I didn't expect, like, Fujita to pin Okada, like, clean. I think that would have been maybe a bit much, but, like, yeah, it is kind of complicated. I think, like, in a certain extent, like, talking about Ospreay on his way out, like, some people, like, we talked about the decision to, you know, not put over Shota Umino, like, when he left. I think to a certain extent, like, it is kind of a thing where New Japan, in some ways, maybe passed up some opportunities to build up their next generation with the wrestlers who are leaving as well as they could have. I guess, like, it kind of now, like, I was kind of a little bit like, huh, okay, after this match. I think, like, it's one of those things where it's kind of like, remains to be seen how they're gonna be doing that after this, because it does kind of feel like, in a sense, if we were talking about like power scaling or whatever, like if wrestling is power scaling like an anime, it makes sense for Okada to win, because, like, he, in terms of, you know, the power situation in New Japan, he has been, like, shown to be so strong that it would be a little bit odd for him to lose. But, like, you know, in terms of building the next generation, it's obviously kind of like a missed opportunity to not do a little bit more with that.
Yeah, especially since it's a trios match. Like, any of the other two guys could have gotten pinned if they didn't want Okada to get pinned. Ishii could have been pinned and he would have been fine. Just saying. Like, that's not a knock on Ishii either, but like, come on, like, it's a championship. Drop the titles. Don't vacate them on your way out. That's just dumb.
Yeah, I think it's maybe I've just not got as strong opinions on it. I'm not too, it is the trio's titles. I'm not too bothered, but I understand the point that, I mean, they could have just pinned Tanahashi. I mean, Tanahashi's lost a few matches recently. And so, I mean, he obviously won the title himself, didn't he? His own title. But I can't imagine he'll keep on for too long.
In New Japan.
I don't imagine it was a situation where they said, you need to drop the titles, and Okada said, no. I can't imagine that, is it? No. I can sort of imagine it's a, they wanted the nice moment at Cracken Hall, that he's won his last match there and hit the Rainmaker, hit all the different moves on the way to winning. And that for me, that's sort of, rather than having him lose the title, they've just had him go out on a high, which I don't think is egregious, really, with it being Okada and with it being the trio's title. And they can just do a tournament, can't they, to get it onto someone else. It's not Not too bad. I mean, maybe if it was ZSJ in the match rather than Fujita. Obviously, Fujita got a lot out of the match, and I think that's something worth mentioning. Even though he didn't win, Fujita got a really nice boost in the match, and they all three of Okada's team were attacking Fujita at once, and he got a really nice moment. He really fire underneath him, really. So I thought that even though they've not won, they've still got something out of it, which is kind of what you want, really, because it's, for me, it was really all around. It worked, even if the result, I wouldn't have done it, but I still understand where it's come from. That's really sort of been it from the New Japan beginning to the New Beginning Tour. There's not been a lot really to write home about as of yet. Battle in the Valley, on the other hand, had some more interesting moments. We mentioned it a second ago with Okada against Ospreay. That was the main event of the Battle in the Valley show from a little bit earlier on in the month, and it was amazing, wasn't it?
Shingo versus Moxley. Oh my god.
We'll come to Shingo versus Moxley. We'll do Ospreay Okada.
Sorry. We're on Ospreay Okada. Okay, sorry. So okay.
They were both fantastic.
This match, by far, in my opinion, is probably the weakest Okada versus Ospreay match there has been in the last 3 years. This match, like, it was still a really good match, but it was definitely not to the standard held for an Okada versus Ospreay match. Meltzer gave it 5 stars. I don't really know if I would have given it 5 stars, in my opinion, but they did it. They did play all the hits in this match. Like, there's a lot of like callbacks to previous matches, like Ospreay countering the Rainmaker with like the flip over the arm and like into the double underhook, just stuff like that. Like, he was very, it was like a lot of the callbacks to their previous matches. And while it was good, I complained about this with like the trios match. Ospreay lost this, and I don't really agree with the opinion, because now it's like Okada is what, 8-2 against him. So it's, I don't know. I think Ospreay could have gotten the win here. I don't think it would have hurt either guys if Ospreay got the win here, just because he's on his way out next month. And then with the news as well of Okada leaving as well, it definitely wouldn't have hurt, but we didn't know that at the time, of course. But that, I don't know. That's just my opinion as like a Ospreay fan, that like, yeah, Okada could have lost this and it wouldn't have affected him or Ospreay in any negative light, and would have helped Ospreay a bit more on his way out, and then he could have just lost everything, all the other matches.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because, I mean, we don't know if the New Japan office knew in advance if the if it was the case that Okada was leaving, so I don't know if there's anything in that. I mean, obviously, if they knew beforehand, then it is, maybe you could make the argument that Ospreay should be going over with the, if they're both leaving the company. But obviously, that door more open for Ospreay with the AEW connection that we know is there. The match itself, though, I think is worth talking about. I mean, I know you understand what you mean there, Fizzo. They've had such amazing matches that even though this one is great, it's maybe not as great as the others they've had. But it built really nice, therefore, in that sort of main event style they often do, with like a steady start and then a really electric and pacey closing stretch. And the moments where they stole each other's moves, I really enjoy that sort of stuff. So that was good fun, I thought. And the other match, maybe on an equal pegging, which maybe you, at the time you wouldn't quite believe, but Shingo Takagi in a no disqualification match with his jeans and his white top against John Moxley. This was amazing. It was just such a brawl. All around the ring and the ringside, and the moment I'll pick out, Fuser, before I let you talk, I know you want to talk about this one, is the, with Shingo threw that kendo stick towards the start of the match, and Shingo threw a kendo stick towards Moxley, and he caught it so like coolly with one arm, and it was just amazing. That was my highlight of the match, but it was fantastic all the way through.
Yeah, just everything about this match was just incredible. Perfect, like, great amount of violence for this. I honestly didn't expect it to be as violent as it got with Shingo. I thought it would have been like it would have had its moment because it's a Moxley match, but I didn't expect it to be like, you know, as extreme as they got with Shingo. But just so many different spots in this match. What was it like? There's a superplex onto like the chairs.
Yeah, no, there wasn't there towards the end. I think Moxie's turned the chairs around, didn't they? So they were sort of facing back to back, so maybe sort of like a spike. Yeah,
they're kind of like arched together and stuff. Yeah, I'm a bit blanking on the spots here. It's been.
It was a few weeks ago in fairness to us, but it was very chaotic, wasn't it? And
yeah,
on Shingo Takagi, it was just coming down on that. He'd seen the rule book, jeans and the white t-shirt to get the blood all over the t-shirt. You know exactly what he was doing. It's very chaotic and lots of plunder as well. I think there was kendo sticks, like I mentioned, and tables and chairs and everything you could have asked for really in this sort of no DQ match. And Takagi entered John Moxley's world and really looked at home in it, I thought, Fuser.
Yeah. Yeah, he looked like he had been doing death matches for like years in that kind of match, even though it's just not at all his forte normally. But yeah, Shingo has had a really strong start to this year already. Like this match, he's matching it in a Dragon Gate's Mochizuki, the Never Open Weight Championship match at Wrestle Kingdom. Like he's putting in his bid for Wrestler of the Year super early on. And it's like he's been showing out with it 100%. Just not slowing down at all, like full on, like foot to the floor on the gas, adapting to whatever match he needs to adapt to. It's been a really, really fun ride with Shingo so far. And I'm hoping that all this builds up to him maybe even winning the championship later on in the year, like in the world title, I mean.
Mm. Putting the flag to the mast very early there for the rest of the year. I mean, but he has, like you said, a few great matches, and we'll talk about the other one you mentioned there from Dragon Gate against Mochizuki. That will come in just a few minutes. But the last thing to talk about in our little whip round New Japan is Tetsuya Naito. And I know we talked about it in the November episode. It was Naito. My prediction, this is why I'm bringing it up, because my prediction's halfway to being right. He won the title at Wrestle Kingdom, and then my prediction was that he'll lose it to Tsuji in a couple of months. So we're halfway there. He's won the title at Wrestle Kingdom. So I'm half right. So I'm nice and happy about that. And we won't talk about the match itself because it is it's a full month ago and I don't remember. But he's got the title now and I'm quite happy about that. I'm not too happy about the fact that we've got a Sanada rematch. It seems to be we're sort of not going forward. We're sort of staying at the same kilt at the minute. But Naito has the title back, Kay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think like in that sense, right? Like I thought it was pretty obvious that he was gonna win the title, right? Especially with what he talked about regarding
his eyes. Don't undermine
my
predictions.
Yeah. Because like right, like as you said, like he can only have that surgery to sort of temporarily fix his eyesight one more time. Like this was the last time. So like if they were gonna put it on him again and try to sort of right the wrongs of what happened the last sounds like they had to go with it this time. And I do hope, like as much as I would find it very funny if he lost it to G Raidery, I do hope that they make the most of this, because you know we don't know how much longer we've got him. That's kind of the thing, isn't it, with New Japan lately? Like it's kind of a changing of the guard, because like all the guys who are basically synonymous with the promotion are sort of, you know, leaving or maybe close to retiring in that sense. Like they're gonna have to build up a new generation fast here.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that new generation, they did the Roy year, didn't they? The trio of the Musketeers, and they've not really done too much with them. They've been in a lot of big matches, but they've not really won any of them against other people than themselves. And I mean, Shota Umino is the key to that, isn't he? He's had so many big matches, but he's not got a huge win on the board yet. And that maybe that needed to be done before Okada left and before Tanahashi sort of started this decline and before Naito had this last big run. But it's not been the case. It's a it's a interesting situation, is probably putting it nicely, that it's the change in the guard, like you said, Kay, and that the main three are on their way out and there's nothing really yet coming up behind them, Fusa.
Yeah, they need basically with Ospreay leaving, Tama leaving, and especially Okada leaving, they essentially need to like jumpstart any plans they had on pushing any of the younger guys into main event status. If they're planning to take another like 5 years with the Reiwa Three Musketeers, they need a jumpstart. That they need to make it in the next two or three. You can't, because that spot at the top is going to be very, very empty without Okada and Ospreay there, and you need to fill that hole up as soon as possible. Because with all due respect to Tanahashi and Naito, they're not going to be able to, at their age, with their current physique and injury history, they're not going to be able to hold that top spot that long.
Yeah, I think that's the key, isn't it? That we, there's not too long left before they really need that new blood to come in and take the reins. So it'll be interesting to see when that does come and if and when, maybe. But Naito has the title, which makes me happier for the time being.
Also, you said that he's going to lose it within, like, in the next 2 months.
I think I stretched it to Dominion, but soon.
I was about to say, you think he's going to lose the title in New Japan Cup season? Where he doesn't defend the title for like a month?
Dominion, stranger things has happened. Stranger things have happened. They might do a Continental Cup and make him defend it in every match of the tournament.
Oh my!
But no, I think I said Dominion on the. Someone will have to go back and check. It was a long time ago. Never, it was before I got this cold that's sort of like suffocating me. But I maybe I said Dominion, but I didn't think we'd get a Sonata rematch, which did sort of come as a surprise to me. But it'll be interesting to see if and when he drops it to Tsuji. hopefully to, yeah, Dominion was my prediction there. But we'll wait and see. Okay, then we'll move on to our Dragon Gate corner, and you'll be delighted to know I've watched the Dragon Gate recommendations this month. The time has come. It's a new year and it's a new me for Dragon Gate watching, so I've watched a couple of Dragon Gate matches with the two we're going to talk about. I'll let you start, Kay. We've got a 10-man tag and then Shingo versus Mochizuki, which we talked about earlier, from January 10th to talk about.
thank you very much for watching it. But I think the 10-man tag match specifically, like that's very relevant, especially in the context, right? We just talked about New Japan's new generation and how they're not really ready yet, in a sense, to sort of fill up that spot, you know, that freed up at the top. And I think that's something that's very, very relevant to that match, because like that match was, in a sense, kind of a showcase for sort of both the old and the new generation of Dragon Gate. Like on one side, obviously we had Dragon Gate's previous like big stars, right? We have BB Hulk, we have Dragon Kid, we have KZ, we have Doi, we have Yamato. And then on the other side, we have all of, like, well, not all of them, but a lot of the like upcoming young stars of the promotion. We have Dragon Daya, we have Kikta, we have Benkei, we have Minora, we have Strong Machine J, like all of whom are, I think like the oldest is Benkei, who's like 30, 31. And all of the others are like in their 20s. And we don't know Strong Machine J's age, but the other side. And I think like this match like really showed up, you know, showed how, in that sense, like how far ahead Dragon Gate's young generation is and like how ready they are to sort of stand at the top of the promotion. But at the same time also that like the old generation, they can still go very, very much as well. So I'm kind of curious, like, what you, as someone who doesn't regularly watch the promotion, thought of that match.
I really quite enjoyed it, actually. It was very fun, and sort of on the surface for me is sort of not knowing who everybody was, even though I've seen most of them wrestle before, but sort of in the configuration of a 10-man tag, I was a bit lost of like who was who and who was with who and who had connections to who. But as a match, I quite enjoyed it. It was very chaotic and there was lots of big spots and big moves. And I sort of described it as it was like free-flowing. So I felt about it that it never really stopped. It just flowed really nicely. And it was my first time seeing Strong Machine J. I know you talk about him every so often, but every month maybe you talk about him. But it was, I mean, it was quite impressive actually. I didn't know what he looked like, to be honest with you, and so I was surprised with the mask and everything. But he was all right, and it was quite a good match really. Probably the best way to describe it was chaotic and quite fun and hard to follow. But as someone who does, that sort of, in my head, that's Dragon Gate, is that sort of match. As someone looking at them from the outside, that's sort of what I expect from a Dragon Gate, a big tag match in Dragon Gate. So yeah, I was quite happy with it. Yeah.
I mean, Strong Machine J really, really takes off his dad, doesn't he? Looks exactly.
He really
like
does. I couldn't quite believe it. He was like his spitting image, but just a little bit smaller. It was quite impressive. Yeah, no, I thought it was quite funny.
Yeah, it is. I do really think that, like, this match, I looked at it on the card, just kind of on the side, like, before the show, and I was like, oh my god, why did they throw all these random wrestlers together? What is this? But, like, I think that's kind of the thing with Dragon Gate. They have, like, these big 10-man tag matches where at the beginning you're like, what is this? And then, like, it happens, and it's actually really fun and really good. And I think, like, this is a match, I think you watched the Japanese commentary version, if I remember correctly.
Yes, it was. I think that's the thing with these sort of things. If it had English commentary, maybe I'd, because you sort of fill in the gaps, doesn't it? But yeah, I was on Japanese commentary for this.
Yeah. Like, I think for this one, it's really worth it to sort of listen to English commentary if you have the option, because Jay on commentary, like, really explains sort of the parallels between the wrestlers. Like, he talks about how, you know, the wrestlers take sort of up positions that free up, you know, when the previous generation leaves, and the way that happened. Like, he talks about how KZ, like, took Akira Tozawa's position when he left Dragon Gate, when he talks about how stuff like Minoru is sort of in the BB Hulk position, where, like, when he debuted, everyone was like, oh my god, like, he's so talented, he's gonna win the title really soon, but then it ended up taking actually really long compared to the other guys in his class to get the title. Stuff like that, and, you know, obviously, like, they have similar styles too. I think that was, like, and how Dragon Daya is in, obviously, like, in his teacher Dragon Kid's position as, like, the guy who's not one of the top guys but super popular and everyone loves him and stuff like that. I thought that was really interesting to sort of see him explain why the match configuration was the way it was and, like, why it made sense as a match. And I think that worked really well in this case. And in terms of those kind of connections, something I also kind of liked in this match is that while both sides sort of, like, worked together as it was convenient, you could also kind of see, like, who is an established team in terms of, like, the people who were actually faction mates or who had been tag teams previously. Like, they all had much more, like, teamwork. They had their own team attacks and, like, got together off. Like, I thought that was really fun to sort of see the closer connections also in these, like, small aspects.
Yeah, no, I think maybe I'd have benefited from English commentary, that I'd have been able to fill in those gaps like you've said there. But yeah, maybe it's something that if I can track out, I can watch it back with that. But one match that I didn't need English commentary for, I didn't need any help enjoying the main event, which was Shingo Takagi against Mochizuki, which was fantastic. This is my sort of thing, really. It was very intense all the way through, actually. It didn't really build like we was talking about with the Okada Osprey match. It was just at you from the very start, and the crowd towards the end, they really got behind Mochizuki. It was his 30th anniversary, wasn't that? Was the reason behind it? And I thought that really added to it, because they were cheering him on as the underdog against Takagi, and that was, I thought, really helped as Takagi sort of buried that in a way. But yeah, really great stuff, and lots of great strikes with the chops and the elbows and the kicks and everything. It was, yeah, my sort of thing, this. It was great.
Yeah, I think, like, one important thing to sort of consider before watching this match is, like, of the people in this match, one of them is 41 and the other is 54. And they both, like, had a mate, like,
Mochizuki's 54?
Yeah, he is.
Wow, okay, right. When I saw 30 anniversary, I was like, gosh, must have started young. I did not think he was 50. Wow, okay.
Yeah, like both of them on the next day had a major match. Like Shingo had his Moxley match on the next day, and Mochizuki had a title match on the next day, like a trios title. And it's like that in itself, like, and it still went like that. And obviously also in terms of age, right? Like when Shingo and Mochizuki had their last singles match in 2015, like back then the story was already that Shingo was like, you're too old. Like I'm gonna, you know, put you out of your misery. Like that was the story back then. And that was in 2015. And Mochizuki is still this good.
The future's now, Grandpa.
It's wild.
Yeah, but I mean, the match was great, wasn't it? Fuse, what was your take on that?
Yeah, no, I did not know either of these guys' ages until this very moment. So
I'm taken aback by that, to be honest with you. I'm still not quite good.
Yeah, I didn't even know Shingo was in his 40s. I thought Shingo was like mid to late 30s. Did not know he was 41. So that just makes this match even all the more impressive with how stiff some of these strikes and kicks and everything were. Like, normally with Japanese wrestling, when there's a lot like chops, kicks, everything, when you hear the thud, you're kind of like, wow, ooh, wow, damn, that must have hurt. This match took that kind of reaction, turned it up to 11, doubled the amount of strikes that would normally be in a Japanese strong style match. And then also factoring in the fact that both these guys are in their 40s and 50s. So makes it all the more ridiculous. Yeah, I have this match as like one of like the top of the year so far, along with Moxley versus Shingo. Like I said earlier, Shingo has just already been on a tear for like just top tier matches. If he should definitely keep this up. I love Shingo. Shingo is fantastic, and I 100% think that he should keep this pace up and continue on doing these incredible matches throughout the entire year. But yeah, no, this one. Stiff, very stiff. I went like, I don't normally wince a lot with wrestling. There is a few times with some of these strikes that I went like, oh yikes.
Yeah, I think something that I also found really impressive, like there were several moments where like Mochizuki, like right in his mid-50s, did like high flying moves. Like he did a Tobe Suicida, he did like a moonsault off the apron. It's like what are you doing, old man?
I'm gonna live forever.
But yeah, I think like Mochizuki is like sometimes, right, like English commentary sometimes calls him the Iron Man and like Dragon Gate's Iron Man, or sometimes jokingly Iron Dad, like as in this match, like his son was also at ringside. I think you might have seen him, like the kid with the blonde fluffy hair.
Oh my god, Iron Dad.
Yeah. And I think that really showed in this match, like both, you know, just in terms of like how intense it was and in terms of the story of the match, like that final stretch where like Shingo keeps hitting him with these like super intense moves and he just like gets up again and again, like Jesus Christ, that was so hype. And like seeing the crowd react to that was amazing. Like they love this guy. Mochizuki is so beloved by the Dragon Gate audience, and I think that was really sweet to sort of see it in that moment.
And you can see why as well, can't you, for matches like that. I mean, that's exactly why they love him as much as they do. I mean, it was fantastic all the way through. So really worth watching that one. If you're like me, don't watch too much Dragon Gate, it's definitely worth jumping on that one. Yeah. Really fantastic.
And I'd also add, like, I don't know if you both saw that part, but like after the match, Shingo challenged Mochizuki's son, Mochizuki Jr., actually, who is the youngest member of the Dragon Gate roster, to a match in the future. So, you know, Mochizuki Jr. is gonna go on his excursion before that, but you know, that's something to maybe look forward to later in the year if Shingo doesn't have a Christmas date again and comes back to Dragon Gate. Yeah. On that day.
Fantastic. Merry Christmas, Mochizuki. I'm gonna kill your son.
Before we move on to All Japan, I know you've got one more thing to talk about in our Dragon Gate corner, okay?
Exactly, and that is the return of Prime Zone, or as it is now known, Prime Zone Plus, Dragon Gate Studio show, which is like, I need to mention that, like, it's the first time that it's come back, you know, since the start of the pandemic. And it's like, original Dragon Gate Prime Zone is like my favorite thing in wrestling. Like, it's so funny, it's so good. Like, some of those skits like live in my head rent free. It's amazing. And like, it's kind of, because it's a studio show in that sense, it's shorter than Dragon Gate's regular shows, obviously, and it's like the tone is a lot more comedic. Like, all the wrestlers have like reporter personas. There are like different people from the wrestlers, and they all like they sort of cosplay reporters as they try to interview each other and stuff like that. It's very charming. It's very fun. And I think like some of that in this like first iteration, some of that already came through. Like, I think what was a bit of a problem is that the production values, I think, were a bit worse than they used to be. Like, it was filmed, honestly, more like an indie show, and the mics weren't very good. So, like, that's hopefully something they can improve on in the future. But the jokes were very good. And, like, in the main event, they really sort of, you know, pressed the nostalgia button. They brought back, basically, like, two older factions for a day. Like, they brought back Tribe Vanguard. And even funnier, they brought back Masquerade without Shun being in the country. Like, that was deeply funny to me as someone who knows this. Like, in our last interview, right, Shun was like, oh, Masquerade is like my light in the darkness. It's like, he talked about this like sort of amazing concept. Like, he adores Masquerade still, like, even though the faction is completely destroyed at this point. And they brought it back, like, including the entrance masks and everything. They brought it back without inviting him. And like, he had a Twitter meltdown over it today, yesterday, and he was like, this is like if someone comes into your house with dirty shoes and dirty hands and they steal everything and break everything.
They touch all of your stuff, there's handprints everywhere.
some fans joke this was like his hangman's worth moment, and like, Dyer was like, well, if you repent for what you did and you become a better guy, maybe we're going to invite you the next time. It was a situation. Like, I think it's like for the first show, it was a really fun time, and seeing that sort of fallout on social media was kind of like a fun bonus. I think I got something, those sort of like emotional beats mixed with comedy, mixed with some nice short matches, I think is what they need to go for. Like, they just need to up the production value a little bit.
Yeah, that's definitely one to keep an eye on, isn't it? If something new or something returning, but something different, isn't it? And speaking of something different, we've got a Charlie Dempsey match to talk about, which I didn't think I would ever say on any podcast. But Charlie Dempsey, William Regal's son, for those who don't know, is in All Japan. He had a match for the Triple Crown title, actually, on January 3rd against Nakajima. He lost that match, but it was fantastic. And he really surprised me, actually, Dempsey, because I've never seen him before. I didn't have massively high expectations. I actually tweeted at the time, it's time to watch William Regal's lad get kicked around by Nakajima, but he actually didn't get kicked around too much. It was very 50-50 in a way, because the catch-as-catch-can style stuff was fantastic. He's just like his dad in that respect. And Nakajima played into that very well, and it was very technical and physical, and Nakajima did kick him very hard, as he usually does. But I thought, all in all, a really good Triple Crown defense, this one, Fuser.
Yeah, so going into this match, I did not actually expect the crowd to be behind Charlie whatsoever. The first couple of like preview tag matches they had on the tour with Charlie, anytime Charlie tagged in, he like crowd dead silent. Did not like cheer, did not boo, just silence complete. Very much like, we don't want you here energy. We know that what WWE is doing, leave now before things go sour. But when the match actually started, like, the crowd was behind Dempsey. Like, they're actually like cheering for him, like they wanted him to win, which was very surprising. I really thought it was going to be like very one sided for Nakajima. As for the match itself, yeah, like you said, very like catch as catch can style for Dempsey. Nakajima actually gave him a good run for his money, I guess would be the term. Dempsey like had a really good showing in this match, despite people thinking that it was gonna be very one-sided. Of course, it got to a point where like it did become one-sided, where Nakajima kind of just like played all of his greatest hits and then pinned the kid, which we were like all expecting to happen at one point. But yeah, a very good showing for him. It definitely is gonna help Charlie in the future, having this match. I hope this doesn't lead to a partnership with WWE, because we know how those usually go. But yeah, a great match all around, and hopefully some of the stuff that Charlie learned in Old Japan relays back in the States for him.
Yeah, no, definitely. I echo all of that, really. Yeah, it was fantastic. Definitely one worth checking out, even though it was quite a few weeks ago now, before Wrestle Kingdom, actually. But definitely a great match there. And it is set up the next triple crown title defense for Katsuhiko Nakajima, which is against Shotaro Ishino. Came out after the match to challenge him. I mean, I really enjoyed the Dempsey match. I'm going to enjoy the Ishino match, I'll bet, even more. I love Ishino. We all know that. And Ben as well. He'd love it. We might have to weasel his way and say, Ben, you need to watch this one. Because that'll be fantastic, I'm sure. Fuser, I'm sure you're excited about that one as well. Ishino Nakajima is coming. I don't think it's too far away either.
Yeah, wasn't it like with Ishino that he was supposed to challenge for the Triple Crown before, but then he got like COVID or something?
He got an injury, I think. I'm not sure injury. What he was, but because he won the, didn't he win the Royal Road? And then that was to give him a title shot, but he got injured. I think that was, he won something that gave him a title shot. It was either the Royal Road or the Champions Carnival. And then
I think
he got injured. Yeah.
I think it was Champions Carnival, because Ryuki Honda won Royal Road. But yeah, no, this is like, oh my goodness. Just seeing after the match, just Ishino come out, it was just like a very much like, oh shit, business is gonna pick up. I just double checked. Yeah, it was Champion Carnival that he did win and didn't get the title shot for. But yeah, it was that's gonna be an absolutely phenomenal match between the two of them. He's gonna show absolutely no mercy. Well, I mean, neither man's gonna show no mercy. This could go really either way. It depends on I think the factor of if Nakajima's done with All Japan by the match, or if he's gonna continue on. I think that's gonna be the deciding factor of who wins the title here. Also, I do have to correct myself. Kojima actually won the Royal Road, not Honda.
See, the memory fades over time. I totally forgot about that. I knew he was meant to have a title match and then got injured. So I was. We were halfway right, weren't we?
We got there.
Yeah, we got there in the end. Fuse, I know you wanted to talk about one last thing before we'll move on. And the last thing we'll talk about is Kenna against Shiozaki in Noah. But you were, Anzai had a great moment, didn't he? On January 14th, he won the Royal Rumble, beating seven others, including Minoru Suzuki, Hideki Suzuki, and Kenta Miyahara, to get himself the a singles match against Masanobu Fuji in the main event. It was, I believe, was it 70th anniversary?
Yeah. It was his 50th anniversary.
Of wrestling, 70th birthday, which is, and he wrestled on his 70th birthday. So the less said about the match, maybe the better, but it wasn't really there for the match, was it, Fuji? It was there for the moment, and a great moment for Anzai.
Yeah, oh, huge moment for Anzai. Don't watch the match. Skip the match.
Was what you would expect from a 70-year-old man wrestling. I mean, it's self-explanatory in a way.
It's what you expect for a 70-year-old man wrestling for 50 years. Match itself, nothing to talk about. But afterwards, Fuji got onto the mic and actually compared Yuma to Mitsuhara Misawa. I didn't pick it up totally because, well, you know, I don't speak Japanese, but I did recognize the word Misawa and him pointing towards Anzai. So that was a very big indication that, like, this is a very big moment for the kid. That basically All Japan's putting all their eggs in the basket. God compared to Misawa, and Fuchi even taught Anzai Misawa's signature face lock. So there, it says a lot about the faith All Japan has in Anzai as, like, the next big guy for the company, that they're making such a big comparison so early on in his career. He's been wrestling for, like, what, year and a half now? Like, that's huge. You don't even see that in, like, New Japan, of, like, the young lions gain those big comparisons or anything like that. Closest we've gotten really is, like, Fujita not going on excursion and just joining TMDK right away. Huge for Anzai, especially with how much of, like, the wrestlers in the promotion are saying they're losing faith in the presidents. It's good for them to establish Anzai as the next top guy, because if they lose a lot of talent because of this, then at least they'll have the future to look forward to. But it really all comes down to what happens in the higher ups in All Japan in that scenario. But as for Anzai himself, big win for, or not even sorry what no he did lose that match but it was a big moment for him post match, and definitely speaks a lot on his future.
Anzai won, didn't he?
I'm pretty sure he lost.
I was sure he won. Did he tap out, the old lad?
I don't think he tapped out. I'm pretty sure he got pinned.
Well, I'll let you consult. That tells you how good the match was, ladies and gentlemen. We don't know the result of the match, or won it, or how they won it.
Vision exposed. Nobody actually watched the match.
I think Anzai won that match. I'm 99% sure of that. Actually, I'll put my flag out there while you consult cage match. But yeah, it proves our point that the match isn't anything to write home about. But Anzai, as the overall getting a big spot, is the thing to come out of that. Have we got there, Fusa?
You were correct. Anzai did win. Anzai made him tap out. I thought Anzai lost.
Oh, smash that.
I thought he lost.
Wow. Right. Well, on that note, we best swiftly move on to our last match to talk about of the month, which was from Noah, January 13th, and Kenno becoming the GHC heavyweight champion once again, defeating other way around. Kenno being the champion. So you get, see, we're all over the place. You throw me now. I don't know who's won anything. But Kenno is the GHC heavyweight champion against Go Shiozaki. And this one was fantastic. A match of the year, sort of level match for me, this one. Quite early, like you were talking about with Shingo earlier, but a match of the year contender, very early doors, was my sort of match. I'll go more in depth in a second, but Kay, I know you've seen this one. What did you make of it?
I'm especially, like you brought up, right, the comparison with, like, Shingo's match, and, like, especially if I compare it to something to Shingo's match versus Mochizuki, I thought the match was very technically impressive. I think, like, just on a pure, like, in-ring level, I didn't really have any complaints. I thought it was really good. Like, on that level, definitely recommend. But I think what, for me, kind of shows, because, right, like, I'm kind of like a storytelling, a character kind of person. And for me, it's like, that's not in any way Shiozaki's or Kenno's fault, because, like, it's kind of a thing with Noah in general. Like, I feel like in Noah as a promotion doesn't really have main characters, because Noah, the promotion itself, is the main character. Like, pretty much, like, every major story is about Noah and about wrestler's relationship with Noah as a promotion. And, like, to me, like, there are some people who really love that. But to me, unfortunately, that makes, like, the storytelling behind all of these big matches, and I kind of include this one, because it again brought up stuff with the I am Noah, blah, blah, blah. Like, it kind of makes us, like, the deeper storytelling and the emotional storytelling a bit unengaging, because I'm like, I don't really care. That sounds mean. I don't really care about, you know, beyond a certain point, I don't really care, like, what a wrestler's relationship to the promotion is. I care what, like, wrestlers' relationships are to each other. And so, like, on an emotional level, this one didn't really engage me. But again, like, on a physical level, really good. Like, there were a lot of really cool spots. And I, like, probably, like, people who generally like Noah's style of storytelling will probably disagree with me on that front.
Yeah, the I am Noah, who is Noah stuff, it's sort of been a running theme, hasn't it? So I understand what you mean with that, Kay, actually. But on the match itself, for me, it's sort of my sort of thing, because they attacked body parts, which I know I talk about sort of too much on these podcasts. But Kenno worked over Shigasaki's midsection, which was, you don't often see that, which I thought was quite nice. And that sort of set up his double stomp finisher, which in a way that was, because that's what you like to see with Naito when he targets the neck. It's all to set up the Destino. So in a nice sort of way that he attacks the midsection to set up his own finisher. And Shizaki sold that really well. And then on the other side, it was Kenno. His knee and his leg was getting targeted, which was just really, that's the sort of thing I like. And that's sort of maybe why I like the match so much, in that they both tied to the body part and it made sense. It was logical in the way they were doing it and why they were doing it. And it was very stiff, the striking with the chops and the kicks exchange they had in the middle. They've got great chemistry, haven't they? We all know that. And they've delivered another great match like we talked about before with these two. They've had great matches, so many of them now. And Fuse of this one, it's another one to add to the list, isn't it, of their just fantastic output over recent years.
Yeah, for sure. It was another fantastic match. I do have a little bit of an issue with the whole title versus I am Noah catchphrase thing. Kenno won the match. He retained the title, obviously. He won the catchphrase, said it like 5 times, and then it was like, okay, I had my fun. Go, you can have it back. And then just gave it back to Go. And then it was like, so what was the point then? You could have just said the catchphrase without taking it and then just had a title match. I don't know. That was just really silly to me. That's how that went down. It's like, all right, cool. I've said it 5 times. This has been fun. Go. This is stupid. Here you go. Have it back. You need it more than I do.
Because Shizaki's Noah, but Kenno can do whatever. Kenno does what he wants. I think that's sort of... I'll defend it in that way. I'm not really too arsed about the story. It doesn't really do. It's just the I am Noah stuff. It's just there. It's just like a vehicle for matches, but the matches are amazing, so I'm never that bothered. The sort of the way they get into them in this sort of strange who is the ace of the company sort of way. But yeah, Kenno, maybe it works for his character in a way that is sort of taking on that Nakajima aspect of if he's got the accolade, but he's not that bothered about it.
Yeah, it just felt very much, it was like a thing of like, haha, I want your catchphrase, and now I'm in your head. Like, it was very much just, like, felt very mind games, and then, like, it kind of was very like, I want this catchphrase, I want to ruin you, Go, I want to take away everything you love. Oh, hey, I took away everything you love. Well, this is boring. I thought this would be more fun. Okay, you know what? Go have back everything you love. I don't need this. But as for the match itself was like still a very strong match. Definitely not the best defense Kenno's had this year, in my opinion. I thought his match against Manabu Soya at the new year was like a lot better. But this was still a very good match. I still recommend this as a watch to anyone who wants to get into Noah, or is trying their best to get back into Noah, or is just trying their best to stay with Noah at the moment with everything happening. But yeah, definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, that's interesting, actually, because this match is second only to Danielson Okada as my match of the year so far. So, I mean... the Soya match was good, but I have the new way around of this one being head and shoulders above. I absolutely loved it. So not a bad place to end on. A nice match to finish us off. One last thing for myself to mention before we head off is Yukio Sakaguchi has announced he's retiring. He will retire on February 7th. And I'm gutted by this, really, because I didn't expect it. Maybe that's the thing, but it's a real shame. I think he's fantastic. Always enjoyed his matches and his style. So hopefully he gets a good send-off on that last show. But yeah, a sad one there, actually, that Sakaguchi's retiring.
Yeah, it's been a real roller coaster for him the last couple months. Saki Akai retiring in November. Eruption broke up after they lost the All Asia tag titles, which they lost them to Atsushi Onita, which, like, come on, why is Onita holding those titles again? And now, just like days after losing that titles and having Eruption break up, he announces that like he's retiring. It's been a roller coaster of emotions for him. It was a big shock that he just decided to call a career here. Not even going on a full like proper retirement tour like Saki did. He's just calling it a career next month.
It's a weird one, and it's just so abrupt. Like you've said, there's no tour, it's just one final hurrah on February 7th. So we'll talk about that next month after that, after his retirement is in the books. But maybe he'll come back, we can help. I mean, I've always been a big fan of Eruption, so when they broke up, it was a bit of a shame. And obviously, we talked about Saki Akai when she retired, Kay, didn't we? And it's sort of another one to add to this, another sort of a strange one, that. So we'll see if anything comes out, really, if there's a reason behind it, we don't know at this stage. But yeah, so Sakaguchi retiring, isn't he?
I mean, like, he's like, if I remember, he's also in his 50s, right? So like, I think it might just honestly be that his body is a bit worn down at this point. Like, that's something I could imagine, because like Saki Akai, like, specifically, like, she wanted to retire while she was still healthy. So like, she obviously still had it in her to do a retirement tour, but like, we don't really know what's, you know, going on with him health wise. So maybe it's something because of that.
Definitely. I think that's probably the most likely, isn't it? Unfortunately. So we'll have to wait and see with that one. And that's something we will talk about next month, and one of a number of things here on Pure Vision. But before we go, remember patreon.com/wrestlein is the place to go for early access and into the Wrestleverse, who are approaching their 100th episode over there, their weekly roundup of everything in wrestling. So if you want to listen to that as they get towards that milestone, patreon.com/wrestlein is the place to be. Search Wrestlein wherever you listen to your podcast for our show and all the fantastic other shows on the network. Kay, thank you for joining us. What have you got to plug?
Thank you very much. I have got to plug, I don't know if it's going to be out by the time, I mean, it should hopefully be by the time this episode goes out, but I'm working on a Dragon Gate for Beginners article, like, pretty big thing that took a lot of time. So if you're maybe interested in beginning to watch the promotion and you don't know a lot about it, you can check that out over on Five Star Network. It won't have a roster guide yet, so you, if like Jamie, you're confused about who is who, like that, that won't be included yet. I want to do that separately. But it's pretty nice, like, beginner's guide to everything else. And I'm also working on 2 interviews at the moment, though they're probably only going to come out after this episode comes out. So I can't say what they are yet. But, you know, look forward to that.
Tailor-made for me, that Dragon Gate guide. I can't wait for that.
That's actually useful for me, too. I can definitely use that as well.
Your Twitter, Kay, for everyone.
Oh yeah, I have a Twitter account at Kay's Quest. I'm not on Twitter a lot lately because I'm very busy, but maybe I'll post there again in the future. Maybe
one day. Fuser, how about yourself?
So I got Ollie Listening. I'm part of Wrestling Network. The TNA podcast, Don't Nonstop Talking. The most recent episode came out just a few days before this episode's dropping. That episode, we talked about the new titles, we talked about Hard to Kill, and we talked about some other stuff on there. So please give that a listen. I'm here now. This is a new home for me as well. And if you want even more of me, you can follow me on Twitter at FusaBalor. It's where I retweet stuff and also complain about wrestling and Okada not playing over the young guy on his way out.
If you want more of that, that is the place to go. The TNA podcast, very interesting, that one. I watched that Hard to Kill show, thought it was great, so I'll give that a listen. Thank you for joining us, Fuser. Our new it's a third leg of the stool we've got going on here. And for myself, maybe a more derogatory metaphor than it was in my head, that one, but it worked. I've just compared you to a leg of a stool, so I don't know anything about that. And all of us, actually, but my Twitter is jjohnson_16. Most recently, I've had an interview with David Francesco from RevPro and Purpose Wrestling all over Britain, the second part of my Keeping Up With The Indies sort of series. I've got two more of those planned and ready, and then we've got a couple in the works. So lots of exciting stuff going on over there if I do say so myself. My Twitter is obviously the place to go for sort of everything of that sort of regard. So thank you, Fuser. Thank you, Kay. And thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll catch you again next month on Pure Vision.